The next CMO podcast explores topics that are on the minds of forward-thinking marketing executives, from leadership and strategy to emerging technologies. And we bring these topics to life by interviewing leading experts in their fields. The next CMO is sponsored by Plana, makers of the world's first AI-based marketing leadership platform, and hosted by me, Peter Mahoney, the founder and CEO of Plana, along with my co-host, Kelsey Kraft. In this episode, Kelsey and I talk to Brian Phelps, the founder and CEO of Big Leap. Big Leap is a specialized SEO agency that Brian founded back in 2008, and we do a deep dive in all things SEO. I hope you enjoy the show.
Thanks so much for joining us today, Brian, this afternoon on the Next CMO podcast. I'd love to learn a little bit more about you and what you do at Big Leap.
Yeah, so I founded Big Leap in 2008. I got started in the digital marketing industry a few years before that. In the SEO world, that's always been my background and specialty, but I started just learning it. They didn't really teach it at schools, and it was still early in the SEO world. So yeah, it was a lot of trial and error. So I built my own websites. I optimized them, got them ranking well, and was able to monetize those sites and actually make a few bucks doing that, which was fun. I just found it really fascinating. But yeah, that's how I got started. And eventually, and like I said, in 2008, started Big Leap, and we've grown a bunch since then. And we're a digital marketing agency, so we provide SEO and content services for other businesses. We've, like I said, since about 2018, it's 2021, we've grown to about 90 people and work with some great brands, both big and small. We just love helping other people improve their SEO performance.
That's great, Brian. And I assume Big Leap refers to what it took for you to actually go out on your own and start your company. Is that a fair guess?
Yeah, that's always a tough time when you're launching that and trying to get something started there. So yeah, a lot of people assume that and it resonates with people that have done it as well.
Yes, I can tell my wife can probably also appreciate, or I don't know if appreciate is the word. She can understand. I did the same thing. Commiserate. Thank you. One of those words. So that's exactly right. So I'm really excited about this conversation, Brian, because I know you guys do a lot relative to digital marketing, but you've really cut your teeth and got really deep in SEO. And that's a topic that Kelsey and I have been talking a lot about lately, and we thought it would be cool to dive a little bit deeper into SEO because it's something that most marketing organizations and most marketers are focused on at some level today, because certainly I think people are woke when it comes to the idea of building great content, but they don't especially know what to do to make sure that they're ranking and getting listed correctly, et cetera. So maybe to set the table, you can give us just a super rudimentary view of what in the world is SEO anyway?
Yeah, that's a great point. It's changed and grown and become a lot more common, which is, I think, a good thing. So a lot of people have a good general knowledge. Of course, we hope we can take it a deeper level here at Big Leap, where that's all we do. But to really, like you said, set the stage with SEO, we look at that as, hey, what are the activities required to perform well, get content and websites and videos and images and all those things to show up in search results, obviously with the goal of users, potential customers, typing those things in and finding our customers, our clients, and generating new customers from that. So we break it down to maybe make it a little bit more tangible in some ways into three buckets. So the first is the technical side of things, the code of the website, how easily Google can find it and index it, the Google bot that comes to the site, they can actually find all the pages and content. That's a really important part of it. That's one bucket. The second bucket is content, which is a pretty big, broad bucket. So that's everything from what the title tags on the website say to the actual written content on a product page, for example. And then even the content from blog posts and infographics and any kind of visual content, videos, all that kind of stuff, we put in that content bucket. And then the third bucket is promotion and popularity. So it's great if you're a brand and you go out and produce great content and your technical SEO is all done well, but Google looks at that third bucket to understand, hey, who's popular in this space? Who should rank higher? And so one of the major ways they do that is to understand if people are talking about this brand or this content through links. So as another website linking to or mentioning this other brand. And so that's a big part of what we do as well, is how do we actually go out and promote and make sure our clients' content and websites are getting linked to so they rank well in the search engine.
Excellent. It's a great, great summary of where to begin here. And one of the things that I like about how SEO has evolved over the years is that everything that you talked about is about creating a great user experience. And it's about making sure, technically, it's everything from your pages are loading quickly and they're efficient and they're organized the right way. And obviously the content is meaningful and relevant and referenced appropriately. And then third is the idea of popularity and sort of the web policing itself and saying, is this something that other people think is relevant? And so the goal, and I think Google's gotten quite sophisticated as well as some of the other search engines, around building their algorithm to optimize for that. And what I like about this is that it's actually doing the right thing by content, where in the past, you literally had people copying and pasting keywords over and over again to try to get their stuff found. And now it's about creating a great user experience. Am I thinking about that correctly, or am I just totally a Pollyanna about this?
Oh, you're exactly right. So if you go back to when I got started in the 2004, 2006 range, it was everybody learning tips and tricks and forums about how to game the system. So you mentioned one about just loading keywords. And I don't remember the last time I saw that, which is good, but used to see that at the bottom of websites where there was just this string of text, absolute nonsense at the bottom of the website. And then people took it to the next level and said, oh, I'm going to make this text the same color as the website because then users won't see it. But Google isn't at that time, wasn't actually looking at the website. They're just looking at the code. So they would see that. So yeah, it used to all be about gaming the system. And you'd see these no-name type brands and things ranking for really competitive keywords because they were better at, you know, gaming the system. And as you mentioned, Google's done a great job, especially at evolving that. And so they're better able to understand who are the real brands that should rank for those different types of keywords and actually penalizing people in some cases if they're trying to manipulate the system. So that's what we love about SEO and why, you know, I think SEO has value even outside of just showing up showing up in the search results. Is we do what you described of trying to make sure that at the end of the day, we don't even need to focus on Google. We focus on potential website visitors and say what's going to make the best experience for them. And in turn, that's going to help us perform better in the search results.
Speaking of Google always staying on top of the algorithms and constantly changing, what is the best way to stay consistent so that you're always staying ahead of and keeping those results that you currently have with SEO?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's an important part of it. And some people, especially I think early people in their careers are getting into marketing. And as we talked about, people maybe that are aspiring to be CMOs look at it as a one-time thing almost, where it's, oh, I'm going to do SEO this year and then we'll see next year. But it doesn't really work like that. It's the best, I think, analogy that I've heard or seen. It's almost like working out a little bit, right? It's this consistent thing you have to do. You can't just, okay, I got a six pack last year, now I'm good for the rest of my life. Like, I don't have to maintain that. You have to keep, you know, working on that, working muscles and things like that. And so it's this ongoing effort. And there are times where you might need to put in more effort because you have competitors that are doing the same. And sometimes maybe you can lay off a little bit if you feel like your results are where you need to be. But that's really the key, I think, for most brands that perform really well in search, is that they do have the consistency you talked about, and it's an ongoing effort that they're always tackling and maintaining.
That's great. Good analogy as well.
So tell us a little bit about the business case for focusing on SEO. What's the cost of not doing it? What's the benefit of focusing on SEO? How should marketers think about that?
Yeah, I think if you look, and there's lots of stats that are out and changing, and unfortunately Google, and which makes complete sense, right? It's their proprietary data and algorithms. They don't exactly say, here's how to rank and exactly what you need to do. So the stats are usually third-party numbers, but there's really interesting, you know, stats about that, about how many people search for specific keywords. And then we can, you know, estimate from there of, okay, what percentage of people that search are going to find you? And then, you know, based on your website conversion rate, how many customers does that turn into? We really try to use data like that to estimate what is the potential, you know, return on investment for something like that. And just over the last, you know, 10 plus years, as we've done this a lot, as we've looked at brands, you know, big and small, Fortune 500 down to an independent owner, business owner type person. Those that have focused and performed well and spent the time and consistency on SEO, it's almost always their best performing channel from a cost perspective. There's great channels, right? There's Facebook ads and Google ads, and there's not that those are necessarily easy, but they're quicker. And so a lot of people, you know, focus on those because they need more immediate type quick results. But it's the challenge with that is just over the long term, you have to keep doing that, keep paying that. You don't build any of your own equity, brand equity there from a search perspective. So we're big supporters of Facebook ads, Google ads, because there's a place for that. But the risk, I think, if you don't shift some of that focus to organic, is that you're at their whim for, you know, potentially a long time. And every time Google needs to increase profits, has an earnings call, what do? They're going to start increasing the cost. And we've seen brands that were able to get a great return from paid search, for example, but just as click costs increase, it almost prices them out where they have a hard time even getting a return, even if their performance is from a Google Ads perspective. So there's some, like I said, some math we can do to show like the opportunity, but, and I think the risk of not doing it is what I just outlined there of just being a little bit too reliant on some of the paid channels.
Yeah. And obviously you're reaching out to different segments of the audience with SEO and search optimization and paid, because obviously SEO is assuming someone's actually searching for something. And there's some level of intent versus someone who may be passively focused on something else and you're going to stick an ad in their face that may or may not be relevant. Hopefully it's relevant if your targeting is done correctly. So it really is an and for most people. And I do believe you're right that you can't ignore it as long as it's aligned with your overall strategy. So do you have examples of companies who shouldn't care about SEO? Let me put it that way.
Yeah, we've talked about this a lot recently and just talking about who we've had success with in our business. And I think there's almost always a fit, but the level of importance definitely can vary. One example that we've had with new brands and startups that have an opportunity to do that, to focus on SEO and see results, but sometimes it's more even from a branded standpoint. So what are like the branded keywords people are searching for? So if I have a new app or something like that, and someone goes and searches for it, and my, you know, app, my business app doesn't even show up, it's a little off-putting maybe as a you know, reputable app or whatever it may be. So we think there's that brand component for them, but we've worked with some startups that are paving a new path and there really isn't search demand at this stage yet for them. So in those scenarios, we'd say, hey, let's make sure, you know, from a branded perspective, the things are looking good. Again, your website, the technical bucket that I talked about is optimized well, and we're creating content that can target the right audience, even if they're not super aware of you yet. And we'll shift our focus a little bit more to those kinds of things versus an example, like one of our clients is Avis Car Rental. A lot of people, millions of people search for, you know, car rentals around the country every day, and they have the right intent that you talked about. And so it's a no-brainer for a big brand like that when your product is just well-known and people are searching for it. So those are the two ends of the spectrum, I think, as we look at it.
Let me tell you my story about rental car search. We used to get inbound phone calls from confused consumers all the time because they were searching for budget and customer service. And what they'd end up finding is our customer service page related to marketing budgets. But what they really wanted to reach was budget rental car. And yeah. I'd get these really unfortunate consumers who were dealing with a complaint or an issue or something like that. And they'd often call, and in the very early stages of my company, this happened a lot. And I'd pick up the phone and I'd be dealing with an octogenarian and listening to this person complain about, where's my refund or something like that. And so that's obviously that they must not be a customer. And I suspect that if I searched for Avis customer service, I'd probably have a much better outcome.
It's funny, Avis and Budget are it's called Avis Budget Group. They're actually owned by the same organization. And so that's an interesting example of where search engines have, I think, gotten better in the last, especially the last few years, of understanding some of that, but that's, you could imagine from a computer's perspective, right? That confusion. We had a similar example with a group we worked with that does a customer support outsourcing. So people were doing exactly what you did. They'd search for Best Buy customer support or whatever and find their site. And so they'd get a lot of those calls. So yeah, that definitely can happen. And hopefully, yeah, the brands are showing up there too. But from the demographics of people searching, sometimes there's that confusion and they can end up clicking on the wrong listing and calling the wrong group.
One thing that I've noticed that's a little bit tricky for brands is that Google's really encouraging, as an example, this sort of structured content model, where maybe you can get exactly the answer you're looking for without having to go deep onto the page and just have it show up in the search results. And that in some cases is great for the brand, because it may be, for instance, if you wanted to find Avis customer service, my guess these days is that you'd literally see that as a number showing up in your search results and you could click it or call it from there. And same thing with looking for contacts or lists of things, et cetera. But sometimes it discourages the consumer from experiencing your site. How do you think about that trade-off between providing convenient information to the consumer and attracting them to actually come to experience your website, where you may be able to get them to do something else too?
Yeah, and that's probably one of the biggest debates in the SEO world, is what you described. Like that example you gave, if you do search that, you know, Avis's number shows up there with their logo right next to it. And like you said, from a user perspective, if that's what you want, then it's great to get that quicker. But maybe I do a live chat or send through their email system. And obviously you can still click through and do that. So as Google's experimented with, yeah, some of the structured answers and things like that in the search results, a lot of what the studies have actually shown is that, like in some ways you'd expect, it actually does reduce your traffic. And so in some ways, if your main goal is purely traffic, you can almost be better off ranking second for a search term than first, because your first one, you're giving them the answer, and then sometimes people scroll past and then start clicking because they don't understand or recognize they can click on that first result. And so it's been this little bit of a debate. It's, hey, do you want to try to optimize for that? It's a little harder with SEO than like paid, for example, to say, I want to be second versus first. Like Google's kind of determining that at the end of the day. And so it's something that we've done a lot of work in. Google has actually changed that. They've, I think, most recently actually reduced the amount of featured answer snippet type of things that they're doing there. But we just look at it overall as, in the SEO world, we just don't have that much control over saying first or second. And so we're just, at the end of the day, going to optimize the best we can. And we've had good success with that. You know, one of our other clients is a HR software company. And so their big keyword they want to show up for is HR software. And we focused on that and had some good success getting them to rank in those featured snippet areas, because we've really focused on creating great content where they weren't there before. So at the end of the day, we look at it as like, hey, from a brand perspective, we'd rather be there at the top than not. So we're gonna still optimize for them.
Definitely. I just have a question on when it's appropriate to fit SEO into your overall marketing strategy. Because say, for instance, a startup, there's a lot that is going into your marketing. When does it make sense for a company to really structure their marketing plan, figure out how important it is to include SEO in their marketing plan and strategy?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the answer is there's always a place, like we talked about a little bit earlier for startups. But yeah, when do you really maybe dig in a little bit more? And for us, that really is guided by search demand. So We'll look, and that's what we do with all of our clients, as we try to take this big inventory, basically, of what are all the search terms people are doing. And that totals up to whether it's 100,000 or a million, you know, searches per month. That's where we can start applying that model and that math to say, hey, what's the financial opportunity? And that's where a lot of customers start to look at it. And that, again, that can still just vary a lot depending on, you know, their type of business. So if someone was getting out and starting, we have a client that's launching a brand new mobile carrier, which is really cool and exciting. But it's a startup and it's funded and they're working on it. But we can do that research and know, hey, there's plenty of search demand now. So they're jumping right in and getting started with SEO from the beginning of their launch. Whereas that other example of more of a B2B app, that may make a little bit more sense to wait until that industry is developed and, yeah, a little farther along.
I was going to say, I think one reason why people do get discouraged with SEO is that they look and they pull keywords, and all of a sudden the monthly search volume is not where it's supposed to be. But that's because you have to create that awareness first in order to get people to actually search for those terms to begin with.
Yeah, we've seen some great, you know, brands that really create the search, the, you know, the non-branded search, like they pave a new path. There's even these brands that have really paved the way, whether it's, you know, Airbnb or, I mean, food delivery, like just all the changes in with new services, things like that. Someone paves the way and then it creates a lot of a search behind it. And so sometimes that first brand benefits from that and they get all that, but sometimes you'll see the second and third comers take advantage of that.
So one of the things that we're seeing these days in the industry is that if I search for, I just search for HR software, since you have a client that does this, and I suspect, I won't say which one, but I suspect yours is near the top, or if not at the top here. But the key point is that before you get to the organic results, there are 1, 2, 3, 4 ads. There's a sort of a structured content thing underneath one of the ads. And then there's another structured content thing. So I literally have to scroll to get to the first organic result. How is that affecting consumer behavior around engaging with organic results versus paid?
Yeah, and so yeah, that's been a big change. That's been a few years ago. Google added that fourth ad, and it, instead of having them over on the kind of the side rail. And what's interesting is, you know, there's a lot of people that recognize the ads and skip them completely. One thing Google's doing better at, I think, well, you'll continue to see this, is they want to make the ads a little more engaging and more on point versus, you know, sometimes you see these ads that you don't even understand why they're, you know, showing up for, and it makes sense to skip over them. So overall, when we look at that and all the different, like you said, the snippets and the people also ask boxes and things like that, is if you compared, you know, how much traffic the very first organic result gets today for a search versus 10 years ago, as a percentage, that's actually decreased. But the interesting part is that the amount of searches increased enough to surpass that. So there's still a ton of opportunity with organic. The amount of traffic's actually increased, but Google has done a little bit of a good job on their part, or for their advertisers' part, in trying to chip away at that a little bit. So it's something, yeah, we're always paying attention to and looking at, but the organic results still, I don't remember the exact stat, but it's something like 80% of traffic, of search traffic, still goes to organic and less going to paid, but that number is definitely increasing a little bit each year.
That's fascinating. And good news for SEO marketers, obviously, is that there's still lots of opportunity to be recognized. And I guess probably good news for paid advertisers, because their ads seem to work. So it seems like they're trying to keep the balance there and keep everyone happy. One thing you brought up a couple of minutes ago, Brian, was really interesting to me, was the idea of using SEO to do really strategic research and answer questions for your business. And in really understanding search traffic is an interesting thing. And I suspect it's something not enough people do to understand what's changing. Is it, one, I'm curious to see if, is that something that Big Leap helps people with in general? And two, what kind of creative applications have you seen of using search research to make business decisions? You brought up this great example of an emerging mobile carrier saying, hey, there's enough opportunity here to do it. But I suspect there are other interesting ones too.
Yeah, exactly. And most people, the stats over the years have shown, like, the number of keywords in a search term have increased almost every year. They get longer and longer because Google's better and better at showing relevant content, and there's, you know, much more content available out there to them. And so one of the things we really focus on is, yeah, what are the questions people are asking that we can answer? And a lot of brands, especially the newer brands too, just don't have that content available yet. So what we can go out and do is, again, if you do a search term, you'll see Google say people also ask, or the auto suggestions as you start typing in keywords. We can gather all that information, and then we inventory that against our clients' content and say, hey, what are the questions that we just haven't answered yet? And let's focus on that and get our website showing up and get people that are relevant, it's the right audience looking for us. And yeah, we usually go through a big effort there. To your other point about how are brands taking advantage of that, or what are they doing? We've seen everything like that example. And that's a great way for new brands that are getting into a competitive market, like a wireless carrier is a great example, to have a little bit of an advantage, because some of those big carriers aren't maybe thinking about all these questions people are asking. But when we look at literally thousands of questions people are asking, it adds up to potentially millions of searches per month. So it's a great way to break into a competitive industry. And then we've also seen it for big brands like an Avis, car rental, Best Buy, AT&T, you name whoever it is, to improve the user experience for their customers. So that's a little bit more on the branded side. So what are all the branded searches and questions that people are asking? And is that brand answering it? The brand, of course, would rather probably be the one to answer the questions and control that conversation versus the guy on YouTube in his basement maybe answering a question that may or may not be accurate. That's a great thing, especially for bigger brands, to make sure whatever's showing up in the search results about their brand is accurate and helpful.
I assume you can also, if you're a big enough brand, to your point a minute ago, Brian, I assume if there's enough volume and you start to see searches about how do I get rid of my or replace my brand X thing, then that might be a cause for concern. And that brings me to this question I've been wondering a lot lately is the idea of how should we be managing the strategic decisions around search in a marketing organization? Because you think about it, these issues span the entire life cycle of marketing, from research all the way through customer acquisition to customer service and everything in between. So it's a broad and strategic thing, which is tricky. In fact, we had one point, I was the CMO of a good-sized company before, a large public company that had a lot of divisions to it. And we had literally parts of the company bidding against other parts of the company for different keywords. And so we ended up saying, hey, let's stop doing this. Let's try to centralize it. Is that something, where does it belong in a marketing organization? And how should you think about the role of managing sort of the strategic SEO topic within a company?
Yeah, I've seen SEO, of course, fall under the big umbrella of marketing. It usually, lives there, and big brands may have internal SEO teams that are managing and maybe focus in different areas. Like we've seen some international companies that have someone over North America and just different countries or continents to try to target that overall. But that is one of the interesting things I think overall with SEO is that a lot of times people want to lump it into its own channel and measure it against paid search and social and all these different things. But at the end of the day, SEO really is just the collaboration of lots of different things, right? So you have your web dev team, which maybe is under IT, maybe it's under marketing, PR and digital PR, which maybe inner communications or the marketing team, content. And like you said, there could be lots of different owners across a big organization that kind of own content. And so I think with a big company, especially a successful SEO person, really they're not probably tracked in their own channel, but they need to be a person that can work across all these organizations. It just can't live only within marketing and be really successful. So I feel like it is really unique and different than a lot of other channels because they can really focus on their own bucket and their own channel and kind of stay in their lane. But especially if there's anybody listening that's looking out for how do I structure this or how do I interview the right people for SEO. That's one of those skills that you probably should be looking for is how do they collaborate, coordinate, project manage across lots of different organizations.
That makes a ton of sense. And knowing from my past that sometimes it doesn't end well if people don't collaborate through these things, I imagine that kind of a person would be super valuable. So one thing I was wondering, Brian, is there one thing that every marketer should do relative to SEO that they're not especially doing? So if you could give people one little thing, one piece of advice to do that everyone should be doing, what do you think that is?
That's a great question. I think one thing that is interesting about SEO that most people, even if you're not an SEO professional, could use and take advantage of that can make your other efforts better is the research side, the keyword research side. So a lot of people in marketing teams want to understand the customer better. They may go out and do surveys and polls and things like that. But there's so many interesting tools that are available that are focused on SEO, but can give you so much information about the exact thing you're looking for. So again, what are those things people are searching for? What are their pain points that you get that answer through their search terms? So it's a really broader set of data and numbers to answer some of the questions that whether you're a PR person, content person, those are the questions you want to know as you're, focusing on customers. And so understanding that and how to use some of those tools, I think, can help you in your job, even if you're not an SEO professional, but also, of course, help your SEO campaign to make sure you're solving those, you know, pain points and creating a great user experience for your, hopefully, your website visitors and potentially customers.
I couldn't agree with you more. And also to continue to go back to those keywords that you originally found and constantly update, constantly find the new words that people are searching for, because I know it's always evolving. But what other digital marketing strategies are often overlooked when it comes to just in general or SEO?
Yeah, the strategies, I think it can be easy, especially if you're an in-house marketer, to you're focused on, you're probably managing several channels and things like that. And so it's easy to lose sight of what is a new customer's experience, right? Because you get to know your website well, you know how to go find that page with the pricing information or whatever it may be. So we think it's helpful for us, even if we're, again, just focused on SEO, or it's, I think, definitely helpful if you're over website user experience, is whether it's monthly, quarterly, annually, whatever makes sense for you, is to try to replicate that experience. And there's some tools that you can use that, you know, record visitors as they come in the site. But even through, whether it's Google Analytics or Adobe Analytics, you can, you know, filter down to those new users and see how much time did they spend on the site, what pages did they go to, and really focus on, you know, that segment. If one of your goals is to drive new people into the site, make sure it's just a great experience for them regularly. I think we do that often when we launch a new website, or it's a, yeah, maybe a once a year thing, but it really should be more frequent.
I'd add to that, Brian, that you should do the same thing with your competitors. So it's really interesting when you benchmark your own initial visitor experience to what your competitors are doing. And I've done this before, and sometimes you feel really good about yourself, and sometimes you discover that, oh my God, I'm so far behind in some areas. And it's everything from that first experience. And the best thing to do is open up an incognito browser or private mode or whatever you're using, show up to start from search, follow your way into the site, give yourself a task, and give yourself the same task for doing the same thing to your competitor's site and see what it feels like. And it can be really interesting. Obviously, it's going to vary a lot based on the kind of business, but I spent a lot of time with B2B technology businesses. So a lot of it was, what's the lead experience? And am I going to go all the way through, find what I'm looking for? Am I going to get followed up with and get a response and things like that? And it obviously is something that can be scary when you identify those things from, see what the differences are from your competitors, which can be startling from time to time.
And we've watched new visitors on one of our websites or a client's website, and you're sitting there watching this recording, but you want to yell at them, no, it's right there, it's so obvious, but obviously it's not. And enough people do that, and you really recognize that it's not as intuitive as maybe you thought it was. So I love your tip there too, of looking at competitors, because it can be easy to, a couple of years ago, you launched something new and that one new and cutting edge at the time, but maybe a couple of years have passed and a new competitor has created a better flow into a lead or checkout process that maybe you hadn't thought about.
I can tell you from our own personal experience that our focus on SEO has been really rewarding. And Kelsey started sort of redoubling our efforts on SEO, and we pretty quickly got to first page results for a lot of the keywords that we were trying to get, like marketing budget software, marketing planning software, things like that, that are really important to us. And it makes a huge difference, and it can pretty significantly contribute to your business if you focus on it. So this is, it's one of the things that inspired our interest in having this conversation, Brian, and certainly can't recommend enough that if people aren't doing much or haven't done much lately with their SEO, if you're not doing something lately, you're not doing it, is probably the point, right? You probably don't have those six-pack SEO abs anymore, right, Brian? And so with that in mind, thanks so much for being here. I think a couple of quick last things before we let you go. One, we'd love to hear just a little bit more about how people can learn more about Big Leap and get more of the giant Brian Phelps brain on SEO.
Yeah, so definitely check out bigleap.com. We have our main page there. You can check us out, as well as our blog on that site as well. And then outside of that, we probably spend a little bit more of our time on, you know, Facebook and LinkedIn, of course. So if you search for, you know, Big Leap, and then you can search for Brian Phelps on there as well at Big Leap. And that's where I usually like to connect. And we really do love to just help and talk through those things. So if anybody out there listening has questions or a unique scenario, we'd, you know, love chatting about that. So definitely check us out on LinkedIn.
Great job with your SEO. If you type Big Leap two words, it is the first organic result, which is hard to do with two very generic English words. Well done, Brian. I shouldn't be surprised. And with that, I think Kelsey probably has one more question.
Yes, I'm sure our listeners have caught on by now that this is the last question we always ask. But what advice would you give to those that are CMOs or aspiring to be one someday?
That's a great question. And we work with, like I said, everything from, yeah, people just getting started career-wise in the marketing field to some really experienced CMOs. And I think one of the things that's really fascinating to us as we talk about them is some of the different approaches out there. And we love brands that are doing the really interesting new, you know, cutting edge things. And there's tons of value in that. But one thing we kind of counsel some of the younger group on is a little bit of what we've talked about today is that SEO has so much value and it really creates this foundation really for your marketing effort. So if you're a B2B marketer, like we've talked about SEO and hopefully it should be growing, you'll have maybe a down month here or there, but it should be growing. And that really creates a stable base that your company can rely on and then go do those other, the Facebook ads, Google ads, some of the, and maybe even more interesting, shiny things, but don't forget about that foundation. We all want to go out and have some big wins. And you can definitely do that by doing some new things that people aren't doing, but don't forget about that baseline and really focus on making that successful and really stable, which your CEOs appreciate, which your sales teams really appreciate when they can really have that baseline to count on. And then, you know, look forward to some of the new fun, exciting things that you may be working on too.
Well, great. This has been a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much for your time today, Brian. And make sure to follow The Next CMO and Plana on Twitter and LinkedIn. And if you have any ideas for topics or guests, you can email us at thenextcmo@plana.com. Have a great day, everyone.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks, Brian.